It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. A lovely day here in Hawaii, and absolutely, the rain is beautiful. And coming in and just looking up at the valleys and what have you, and it reminds you of going to sleep and waking up into a place that's so special. So hopefully we can keep it that way. I don't expect to see any high rises in my lifetime to block the view, but you never know. So take the breathtaking views now and enjoy them and remember them, because in 10 years from now, they're going to give away the airspace. You won't see the mountains, and you won't smell the flowers, and it'll be bump and grind. So I got Albert Lanier here with me today. Hello. Hello, Albert. And we're going to be talking about a couple things, and especially I said last week we'd talk about the boat, the Pacific Paradise that ran aground, but I should say that it's still the ground.
Surprised that it's not in the ground.
Yeah, well, leave it up to the folks that's responsible for cleaning up and keeping it up. That's
among the most shameful things that I've seen at sea in this state, I think, in years. It's just absolutely terrible. Terrible. Terrible that it would be allowed to keel over like that and slowly sink. It's terrible.
Well, I think if you'll join in with me later on, and we're going to be talking about boats and whatever float your boat. Mm-hmm. In that case,
you can't row your boat.
Yeah, and the two young ladies that were women that were what would we call that? I'm careful to call it stranded or lost at sea.
Well, yeah. In my piece, I guess I should introduce myself in terms for those who aren't aware of me.
Yeah, you know, because you sound like and look like me, so we want to make sure that.
Well, I don't look like you, nor do I sound like you.
Oh, you don't, huh?
No, we have different voices.
Yeah.
Can't you tell?
I'm.
Can't you tell? I have a different voice.
No, it's can't you tell.
No. From where you're from, it is. I'm from Hawaii, so it's
Kaint. K-A-I-N-T.
No, you're. Yeah. From where you're from, yes. From
the Southern vernacular.
Yes. I'm not from the South.
You poor thing.
No, but good thing, because I'm from Hawaii, born and raised.
Okay. Well.
So, just by way of introduction, as Carol Cox had mentioned, my name's Albert Lanier. I'm technically a retired journalist and freelance writer. But in regards to this situation, which we're going to be talking about, it's the rescue of a 50-foot vessel called the Sea Nymph. And there were two women on board, Jennifer Apple and Tasha Puyava. And two dogs, I think Zeus and Valentine, and they were rescued last month, October, by the U.S. Navy. And this rescue became a big story. I just caught it nationally initially on a local TV station. I can't recall which one. It might have been KITV, Channel 4. But this has really blossomed into a national story. All the networks covered it. I think even the cable news stations covered it. And so at first, I didn't really pay attention to it because there's so many things going on in the world. I had no interest in it personally. Two women rescued, U.S. Navy. Okay, good for them. It wasn't until I read an account or an article by the Associated Press that I started getting interested in this, because nothing made sense. Absolutely nothing made sense. There were questions that were raised about the rescue, really about their details of their trip. Just to describe that, they were on this boat, as I mentioned, J. Jennifer Apple and Tasha Fuyava were on this boat, the Sea Nymph, and they were scheduled to take a trip to Tahiti in the South Pacific. The Tahiti trip, I think, was about 18 days, according to what Apple has said. And I guess they were going to spend maybe 2-3 months overall in the Pacific, South Pacific. They, according to Apple, they had run into a storm the first night, or the first day that they left Honolulu, because they're both based in Honolulu. They left Honolulu on May 3rd, and they said they ran into a storm.
Mm-hmm.
Force 11 storm, according to Apple. Now, she said that this Force 11 storm created 50 to 70 mile per hour winds. Strange thing is that the National Weather Service, and I believe NOAA as well, have stated that there were no storms in the area. I believe even NASA satellite photos recorded no storms. And so, according to these authorities, there was no storm in the area. I believe there was a small craft advisory, but there was no storm in the area. I found that strange,
mm-hmm.
among other things. Another aspect, I mean, there are many details to this. Another aspect that Apple said that the storm lasted 3 days and two nights. After the storm, Apple and Fuyava had made the decision not to dock anywhere, go back to any of the islands in the state, or dock anywhere. They said that Maui and Lanai, for example, ostensibly didn't have harbors that they could dock at. They said, oh, their 50-foot boat, which was about the length of the Sea Nymph, they couldn't find any places to dock on Maui or Lanai. Weren't any harbors big enough to take their boat. Now, I also found this rather incredible, not to say the least. I mean, I could see if they had one of those gigantic luxury yachts. Now, maybe that would have made sense, but they had a 50-foot craft. You mean to tell me that a 50-foot craft can't find a harbor in Maui? That Maui, which is a major island here in the state, as we all know,
mm-hmm.
can't accommodate a 50-foot yacht, 50-foot craft? Really? That doesn't make any sense. I mean, that absolutely begs incredulity. So those two aspects immediately got me suspicious about this story. I mean, about this rescue. As I said, I had no interest in it whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just scratching the surface here. I'm just scratching the surface. So those two aspects got me interested. And so what I did was I decided, I often write pieces for Civil Beat, mm-hmm. which is a site I know you're well aware of, Carol. So mm-hmm. I had recently done a piece about the homeless in Hawaii. I think it was called The Propaganda of Homelessness in Hawaii. And so what I decided to do, because none of what Apple had said made any sense whatsoever, for whatever reason, I said, this is interesting. In fact, it's fascinating. There are a lot of unanswered questions here. I think I should write about this. This didn't fit the type of piece that I normally wrote for Civil Beat. I wrote analysis of issues. I didn't write about specific news stories per se, events, but I thought, this is interesting. So I wrote a piece called The Strange Case of the Sea Nymph, which ended up coming out this past week. I think it was either Monday or Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And everything kind of came together quite fast, because they started, they were rescued late October. Then near the end of October, there were these questions that were coming up about the rescue. People were questioning it. And I had, I think, written it over last weekend or thereabout, sent it up to Civil Beat, and they did it. And now the story has grown and grown and grown and grown and grown. Mm-hmm. So that's just to set up some of the basics of, you know, why I looked into it and questioned it, as well as a couple of the details that made me question it in regards mm-hmm. to the CNIP.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things, looking at this when it first showed up, I heard those same comments. Well, no one could take this, and I'm thinking, we would get tanker ships to come in here daily, five and six of them at a time. There was the humongous dredger here, an unreal machine that came in, and they turn it around right there in the mouth of the harbor, practically. Mm-hmm. But you couldn't do a 50-footer. But one thing that caught my attention in the initial stages, as we've talked about, mm-hmm. quote, had they not been able to locate us, we would have been dead within 24 hours.
Excellent point.
That, to me, was, wait now, you've been at sea for 5 months, mm-hmm. and you haven't triggered your EPIRB.
Right.
But you're now creating this, the intensity or the intrigue to just, by offering
just,
that.
Right.
See.
Just to note, the EPIRB is an emergency position indicative radio beacon.
And we'll see, all my listeners, they're shocked. They already know that. No, I'm kidding.
No, I just thought I'd explain that. And it's interesting that you bring up the EPIRB. My understanding is that she bought the boat, bought the craft,
right.
the Sea Nymph. And from what I understand, the EPIRB was part of the boat. So they mm-hmm. had an EPIRB. That was confirmed that they had an EPIRB. And that they did not activate it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's an interesting point. You brought up two good points. Let's go with the EPIRB first.
Mm-hmm.
According to Apple, she stated that they had run into a storm the first night or first day that they left, which was in May, early May. May 3rd of this year. They went through a Force 11 storm, which he stated was 50 to 70 miles per hour. Not only that, lasted 3 days, two nights. They did not activate the EPIRB.
Right.
They did not. They later on had gone through a supposed white squall, which supposedly knocked out the engine and the communication.
Mm-hmm.
They did not activate the EPIRB. At no point in this voyage of theirs, and they stated they were stranded at sea initially for 5 months, did they ever activate the EPIRB through anything, which I'm sure we'll go through some of this, but at no point did they activate the EPIRB. Does that make any sense to you?
Oh, yeah. And if the boat were to, she said, within 24 hours they'd be dead,
mm-hmm.
how did she know they would be dead? Now, this is me thinking right. of devil's advocate here. Well, if you're that exact, then you should have taxed yourself with that same ability to see and know the future and not go out to sea if mm-hmm. you're not prepared. You should have been thinking before you untied that cleat and started to head out to sea for
right.
Parts unknown, right?
Uh-huh.
But nobody in their right mind
mm-hmm.
would say that, well, how do you know how it's going to end? You're sitting there calculating how long it's going to take for the boat to sink, and it was taking on water. I didn't see anything mm-hmm. that offered that there was a dire emergency, but... And I said to myself, well, gee, mm-hmm. didn't she know that if the EPIRB eventually hit the water, it would be immediately triggered?
Right. My understanding is that EPIRBs nowadays, I don't know how they were in the past, are fairly well made,
mm-hmm.
and that the signal will go out whether you're above the water, above the sea, above water, or below water.
Right.
It will go out. And they do save lives, from what I understand, in terms of what research I've done. You bring up, this is a really good point that you bring up. It's interesting. They stated at the press conference, after they were rescued, the point that if they hadn't been rescued, they would have been dead in 24 hours. Now, you bring up another interesting point when you state that, which is the preciseness.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what's interesting about this aspect. when you look at, I don't know if you've seen any video of her talking to the press.
Oh, yeah.
You have.
I was watching like a hawk that just thinking, this is interesting. You know, first of all, you own a 50-foot yacht.
Right.
And then you making fatal missteps such as that.
Right.
You know, and with two people, and then you the skill of each individual.
Well, it's, you bring up, before I get back to that, interesting, the skill of each individual. My understanding of Fuyava was that her, let's just say the other passenger, was that she had never sailed before.
Mm-hmm.
She had ostensibly no knowledge of sailing or of the sea that I'm aware of. Now, that's just reportedly. They had met, from what I understand, a week before they set off.
Yeah, that is what other media sources
media reports
report.
Have said. So let me get this straight. This was one of the things that I noted in my piece for Civil Beat, which is called The Strange Case of the Sea Nymph. Why would... one of the things that stood out was the fact that Fuyava had absolutely no knowledge of the sea, from what I understand, and never sailed before. If you're on a 50-foot yacht, and you're making a voyage to a trip to Tahiti and to the South Pacific, and you're in the Pacific Ocean, and you never know what you'll face on any trip if you're going out on a large ocean, gigantic ocean like the Pacific Ocean, why would you bring someone who has absolutely no sailing knowledge, no knowledge of boats that I of course, that's speculation. I don't know if she does or not. But from what I understand, she has no knowledge of the sea, no sailing, had never sailed before, is essentially a greenhorn. Why would you bring someone like that on a boat? There's only two people. And then another aspect is they had two dogs on the boat. That's another thing that makes absolutely no sense.
Well, there are people that are capable of traversing the oceans single-handedly.
Right.
And so that aspect, the element of it, is doesn't concern me as much as, you know, she could have just gotten on the boat by herself. But here's one interesting thing that causes me to say,
Well, see, she could have gotten on it by herself, but she didn't.
It's critical to how I arrive at my point to be suspicious of this whole situation. And that is, if you are going to captain or skipper a boat that's 50 feet long and a sailboat, and I don't know what kind of motor she had, if she had an outboard or a small jimmy or diesel in it. I read somewhere. But anyway, so you're going to just putt-putt on the power, or are you going to do the mast and run the sailboat, you know, all of that. But here's the thing that caught me. If you're going to do that, this is where you be more concerned and more observant of all the safety things. And you know, one of the basic things, I don't know if there's one that exists, or this is after the fact, a trip plan.
You mean a float plan?
No. I'm going to take a stranger that I met playing racquetball the other day, and she and I, we're going to take off, and we're going to sail to Russia.
Right.
And we don't know when we're going to get there, but you would expect me to say, well, Carol, which direction are you traveling?
Right.
Well, I'm going to stop in Panama, and I'm going to go, you know, and then I anticipate being there in 3 months or 6 months, you know. I mean, but you have a trip plan. You lay it out. If there's a problem, and then you also in that when there's long-term seafaring, you have check-ins, and then you go and check to see if your system and if your bilge is working, and you just don't go, well, I left home with it running. So you go and look to check the hoses, and you do an engine room check, or you do a down below check, or you do a motor check.
Right.
I didn't see any of that. See, there's so many things that a normal seafarer would have in place, or measures that would take, that says to me. So here's the problem. I think it is so ludicrous and ridiculous, this whole situation. That is why the Coast Guard decided, you know what? Something's beyond our purview of investigating. So we're not going to bother.
Well, that's kind of odd that they're not investigating, because I have to be brutally honest. I've never seen a sea rescue like this.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
Nothing adds up. Nothing makes sense. And that's why I wrote about it. I mean, I just looked at this and I said, this, I mean, it's not even Christmas time yet, but this is the gift that keeps on giving. Seriously. I mean, this is a really odd, weird story. I mean, okay. Let me just...
Now go easy on that.
I mean, I'm not. If you've read my piece, which came out earlier this week in Civil Beat, I basically exposed them for who they were. I said they're lying. I said both Apple and Fuyav are lying.
Based on what now? I mean,
how much of a list? I could be here for 3 hours.
Well, how much do you want?
Okay. How much do you want me to go into? Okay. They were lying. How can I prove it? Well, I've got lots of proof. Why were they lying? First and foremost, the fact that there was no recorded storm after they left on May 3rd.
And this is according to NOAA Weather.
I think National Weather Service. NASA satellite photos that were supposedly archived in the air, in the region,
mm-hmm.
found no storm pattern. So first and foremost, what was odd to me was the storm. Also, what was interesting, and you brought up a little when you mentioned detail. What's interesting to me is how odd not only Apple was. If you've seen any video of her talking to the press, this woman is strange. And what's odd, what's interesting is how specific she is.
But that's, you and I are strange too. We could be showing
well,
up
I'm not strange.
Well,
I'm not even Dr. Strange. You know, let's be honest. What's interesting to me is how specific she was. Mm-hmm. If you look at what she talks about, she goes into descriptions. The mast... And she says the rigging broke off from the mast.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there are videos, I guess she uploaded on YouTube. Before I came here, I went on YouTube.
Right.
And there's video of her that she shot. I guess she was waiting for the Navy to pick them up. But she shot video of the craft. Now, why I thought they were lying was the specificity of details.
Right.
It was unnecessarily specific. Now, if she just said we had a white squall that ruined, you know, that knocked out our engines and communication, that might have been a lie, but it would have been plausible.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, she said on the initial night that we left, there was a Force 11 storm.
Right.
Why Force 11?
And she departed from where? When she
Honolulu.
Left. And did we have a Force
2? No. I can't recall any storm warnings myself. That was one of the reasons I said I don't recall any. Because normally a storm like that would be significant enough for the local weather anchors here to go, no. And like, you got to be careful. You know, there's a storm. Even if it doesn't hit Hawaii, even if it doesn't hit the islands, mm-hmm. there would be significant. Force 11 storm, 50 to 70 mile per hour winds. Not only that, but Fuyava said that she slept during the storm. She said she slept. Really? A Force 11 storm, and you're in a 50-foot craft, and you're just knocked out sleeping during a Force 11 storm? Really? That doesn't make any sense.
But if the mast hit her upside the head while she was out taking pictures, then she probably fell into a deep sleep.
Yeah, I think that, yeah. Maybe you'll find that in the Lifetime
That's after she
movie.
Retrieved her mast from the water that as we had fallen off. And
but, I'm looking, the specificity of the details make absolutely no sense. Why are you going into specifics?
Right.
Why? It makes no sense. And the fact that they did not anchor or dock anywhere, I'm like, really? You have this Force 11 storm. You dock nowhere
mm-hmm.
in the Hawaiian Islands. They didn't go to Kiribati. Christmas Island. Nothing.
Gotta
those
call
two
it.
Alone.
And hold that thought
right.
there. Caller, thank you for calling. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Yeah, I just want to make interject a little comment when I turn my radio down. As a former owner of an ocean racing sailboat and raced in San Francisco and the AGNC Europe and raced my boat, I just want to add another feature that wasn't added. When you looked at the picture of the boat, I didn't see any self-steering equipment on the stern for, a single sailor would use because he could go to bed and put the self-steering on. And with the other person who's with no experience, you'd have to have somebody on the tiller 24 hours navigating the boat, steering it towards your destination.
And watching for, you just don't...
Yeah.
That was one of the things I found very odd was that you have someone...
I don't know what the motivation is for their story or what they were doing floating around. As far as the food is, I have food packets that you buy that last for 15 years. So I guess they had this type of food that you can order. It's dehydrated. So they had enough food.
They had enough food for about a year, they said.
Yeah.
Right.
I guess they were planning to float around for a year
They were looking to float around for a while, apparently.
And another thing, I didn't hear the Coast Guard checking to see if they had a license to sail. Nowadays, you have to have a license to sail a craft. Previously, you did not have to have a license to sail a sailboat or a motorboat. You have to take a Coast Guard pass a test. And there's no indication as to what her previous
Well, let me just point out that according to the Daily Mail, an article in the Daily Mail, she had an accident with a boat in 2012. I think her boat had run aground or got smashed. I think it was a Magic Island. She was taken down,
leaving in Alawai. Resting on the rocks.
So she had a boat that she, I think, supposedly lived on. And her boat, she had an accident in 2012. According to one official that was quoted, it was a total loss. Mm-hmm. And so she had a previous accident with a boat. So her experience that I know of, she said she had sailed around the islands for a number of years. So she had some sailing experience. But she's had an accident, from what I understand, according to the Daily Mail, and you can read their story. And gets into other details that... we might touch on, she's had some previous boating experience and had a boating accident, 2012, supposedly.
So,
I recognize the boat as a Cal 50. It's a nice boat. It's like a mini apartment. I'd like to own a Cal 50, the whole story doesn't make sense.
Right. Can I ask
you? Take anyone with you on a trip, but. Basically, if you're the experienced one, and if it has self-steering gear, you really don't need the help of another person at the helm. Otherwise, you need someone there 24/7. But I'll end now.
I did want to ask you something. I wanted to ask you something because you said that you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay. So one of the things that even if. Trusting that equipment to be navigating itself, self-steering and whatever, only the dumbest of the dumb would turn it on and go down below and go to sleep and when there's another able-bodied person to at least sit there and watch because ships, you may cross a shipping channel and it sounds like what they were operating, their expertise, you can't take anything for granted. But let me go back and tell you another point that I observed. It was almost that frantic, exciting, she was jumping, doing jumping jacks.
That would get into another area, which is behavior.
Yeah, well, no, not behavior. This is something very simple, an observation. So you've already declared that you were going to be dead in 24 hours if they hadn't rescued you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that means you've assessed the circumstance and you've evaluated it, and it's deadly. It's dire now.
Mm-hmm.
So did you see her with any life preserver? We'll call it a life. You didn't see that, right?
Well, the photos that I saw,
flotation. I didn't see any. She wasn't. But
you mean Jennifer Apple?
Period. There's only two people involved.
I think Tasha Fuyava looked like when she was climbing up. She looked like she was wearing something.
Right, because
they may have given it to her.
But you see, the point is, you if you know you are. Going to go down in 24 hours? Because clearly, I mean, when I read that, I go, she had a boat, and then there was a hole in it on the other side that we can't see, and it only would last another 24 hours. I don't know how she decided 24 hours.
Well,
so here she's on the boat, jumping, you know, and I'm thinking, in preparation, when you know you have an emergency, and you got time to, you prepare certain things, and then what was the status of her craft, her emergency raft? You know, all of that. I'm just standing there and looking at her, and then I'm thinking, when I worked on the sea, you wore a life vest or a life preserver, period, right? A jacket or some kind, a flotation device. And you had a small beacon light. You had all that because you just never know when you're going to be thrown overboard or knocked overboard by a wave or accidentally slip, whatever, right? Your boat go down. I didn't see any of that. So that drove me into thinking there's something very, very suspicious about this whole story.
Well, I assume you're referring to when the video of the, I guess it was the naval craft that came out to the boat?
Right.
From that video, and I think there's a picture of it alongside in my piece on Civil Beat, she's not wearing anything. She has a white shirt on that I recall. I think it was a white shirt.
White or grayish shirt.
Something like that. But there was no flotation device.
Right.
The only time I saw a flotation device was Tasha Fuyava, when she was climbing up, I guess it's the naval vessel, from the boat.
Because they have a policy that if you're going to just allow someone to come on board, once they engage, they take their necessary precautions to make sure in case you get sandwiched between the two vessels or you slip on the ladder, they want you to pop up like a, you know, piece of popcorn.
Right.
But
she wasn't wearing a flotation device from what I recall seeing in that video, what briefly I saw. And in the photo, you'll see that she was just wearing, like I said, her shirt. I saw, I guess she's uploaded video to YouTube. I don't know. The date is November 12th.
Mm-hmm.
So she showed video of the craft.
Right.
I guess the rigging had supposedly broken off from the mast. And she said that. Now, in regards to your point about 24 hours feeling that they were going to die, as you're probably well aware, they were sighted initially by a Taiwanese boating vessel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, initially in the press conference, Apple had said that the fishing vessel had treated them fine. They were kind. She later then said that they were fearful of being on this vessel or fearful of people on the vessel.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's since come out that she thought that the Taiwanese fishing vessel, that they were going to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
I read that recently.
Well,
she stated that they were going to kill them.
Yeah, but it offers, if you're going to write a story later about this, you incorporate and you orchestrate some of these exciting points, you know, and you add color to your story, you know. Oh, my God, there's a ship loaded with Taiwanese, and they might eat us, you know.
What?
No,
They didn't say that.
No, I'm saying. This is you go to the extent of exaggerating and what have you.
Is it zombie sailors?
When you're telling the world that you within 24 hours you were going to die.
Right.
and then a boat comes along and spots you and
right.
reach out, then you're worried that they're going to harm you, but they didn't harm you, and then,
right.
you know, if the whole thing just reeks.
Right. Well, they stated, one of the things I kind of, I believe I noted this, I noted the Taiwanese vessel detail in my article. To me, that's one of the keys to this, I hate to use the term mystery, but to this mystery, was the Taiwanese fishing vessel. Notice that they didn't go into detail about it.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't talk that much. They went into detail about everything else, but not that.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I believe that that's one of the essential, crucial details. And her account, when I saw her video of showing the different parts of the boat, of the sea nymph, she stated that the Taiwanese fishing vessel had rammed into their boat. That video said rammed 8 times. And they were trying to tug the boat. They had said that before, that they were trying to tug the boat, but it didn't work out. She said in the video that she was taking, ostensibly while waiting for the Navy to rescue her, that they had rammed into the boat 8 times and damaged parts of the rear of the boat. And that's what she was showing.
And when did this take place? Before the...
Well, the Taiwanese fishing vessel had sighted... What's odd is...
In what period of time? Within them departing Honolulu, when were they discovered?
Well, this
by
is later on. When they were sighted by the vessel...
Yeah, but when? And then when did the Navy... What length of time in between the...
Well, they were already stranded for, I guess, ostensibly
okay.
5 months.
But that doesn't answer my question. When did the Taiwanese discover
That's
them?
What I'm saying.
Okay.
They were stranded already for 5 months.
Okay, so it came within a short time
That's what
period.
I'm saying, yeah.
Okay.
That's how eventually the Coast Guard had contacted the Navy. Because obviously they're out of the Coast Guard jurisdiction. They were sighted, 900 miles southeast of Japan. Okay. Which explains why there's a Taiwanese fishing vessel that sees them. So they're 900 miles southeast of Japan. Supposedly, Apple had said that she went and made a call on the boat. Either swam over or went over to the Taiwanese fishing vessel to use their sat phone. And that's another aspect of their story. They had 6 forms of communication. None of them worked. Right?
And then to swim, or did they bunker alongside and then bring a...
She said at one point that she swam over.
Okay.
And she also, I think they also noted that they were on the boat at some point.
Carl, are you there? Hello? Anyway, but let's make sure that her story might be the perfect story, and we don't have any idea, but we're offering
It's our a perfect
suspicion.
Lie, that's what it is.
Well, we're offering our suspicion.
No, it isn't. She's lying.
Because I wasn't there, but...
I stated point blank in my article that they're lying.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying and how you're saying it, but I'm just saying, just for this clarity, we weren't there, we don't know, and I would love to...
Well,
I've heard her come here in the studio and sit and tell us what really happened. Then imagine, but just the basic, when someone abandoned their safety and their concerns, and you know, let me tell you don't take nothing for granted when you're on the water,
mm-hmm.
and you always. You might think, well, I walk around with no shirt, no shoes on, and you know, but one slip from the deck, brother, and
right.
you're gone.
That's one of the reasons I couldn't understand why they brought their dogs. I mean, if they loved those pets so much, why would you bring them on an ocean voyage?
Well, that's,
where they could easily fall into the sea.
Well, I mean, you'll see many people come. Go down to the yacht club. You'll see
right.
me kind of
I'm just saying that doesn't concern me so much. It's just a minor detail. But the point that I would stress about this whole Taiwanese fishing vessel is that it's they're very suspicious parts of the story. That to me is one of the most suspicious. What I noted in my piece is, one, that they're lying. Two, that they're engaged in a cover-up.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say here, three, that they were doing something out there. What they were doing, I don't know. People have speculated on the thread on Facebook of my story.
Mm-hmm.
I can't speculate. I mean, I could speculate if I wanted to, But I don't have any facts or evidence to say conclusively what they were doing. My suspicion, based on the details that I've been debunking, is that they were out there for a reason, and that all of this was concocted, put together for a reason. The details are far too specific. Apple's narrative is very, very, very presentational. It's almost like she's in a class going over detail by detail by detail. Very unusual. And also you have to look at their behavior.
But she knew where she was, apparently, at times.
There's no doubt that she did.
Because she stated, there's a CNN article that talks about, well, we didn't have our hand, our radio, and our radio telephone wasn't working. And also our Iridium sat phone was not working.
Right.
This is the perfect storm. I mean, nothing, okay, by now, I would be as nervous as all get up, because if all of those things have failed, right? Well, but anyway, Apple told CNN, they're dependent on the antenna, and when the antenna went down, so she said, we tried to head towards the Republic of Kiribati. What were you relying on to get to Kiribati, to know where you were, your location? You obviously knew where you were.
With what?
But you're lost.
You had to take down the sail. There's, when they were sighted, there's no sail. They didn't even put up a sail. Pants, clothes, whatever. They put no material up there.
Yeah.
And yet you're going to sail not only to Kiribati, but also they wanted to go to the Cook Islands.
Yeah, I'm saying.
They wanted to go with what?
I'm just, you know, playing Monday morning quarterback here, but these are the things for me.
Well,
now,
I guess
I'm
the defensive line if you're Monday morning quarterback.
But they traveled on towards the Cook Islands, but it ended up in a white squall storm that pushed them west.
Right, and that's what knocked out the engine and the communications, according to them.
You know, for me, well, I would have had me a sea anchor, you know, and okay, we're dragging too fast and or something, and, you know, if I can slow this drift down, put that sea anchor
and
out.
And keep this in mind. They supposedly had a storm on May 3rd. A Force 11 storm didn't use the EPIRB. They later encountered a white squall which knocked out the engine and the so-called communications. Did it use the EPIRB? That's two storms. No EPIRB.
You know what I think is an injustice here, though, is to the dogs. I think the dog should be on TV every day doing commercials now for having to put up with. I mean, you know, if you were a dog and you had to put up with this, be exposed to this kind of stuff, think you would be deserving of a commercial.
Well, here's the thing. I saw a video by a guy. It's called Slow Boat Sailing.
Right.
It's a really good video. Because he goes through the case, and he's a boater himself. And I recommend it to anybody who wants to get a good idea, even though he's not a journalist, he's a boater. But he went through it from a nautical perspective. He went through all of the details that didn't add up, and I highly recommend that video. I think it's hoax or fake or hoax or something like that. Here's among the other – here's what I found interesting. I saw a video – the Navy, I guess, released this video of sailors washing the dogs. I think their names are Zeus and Valentine or something. So I'm looking at video of this, and all this video of these sailors, washing these dogs. And I'm going, it's interesting that the dogs got more attention from the Navy than these women did.
It's inhumane to these animals to be on a boat with people that are so incompetent.
That's
my
point.
That's
why I brought that up.
The Navy has a sense of good feeling, goodwill toward these dogs.
I kind of like that they focused on the dogs and not on Appel and Fuyaba. I like that. Just going to come out and say it.
But this is what so many of these things has popped up, and I'm not there, but I thought, wow, I'm having been on the ocean and worked on the ocean.
Right, but you've sailed and you've been on the ocean, so you have a knowledge of the ocean
and a fear of the ocean.
Right.
If you stop fearing the ocean, then you're the dumb.
That's what I'm saying.
If you don't have that element of fear in you out there on the seas,
to respect the ocean.
Patrol,
you have to respect it.
You have to, and then you think ahead. You know, you can't be perfect. But here, right. here's the glaring one that really, for me.
Just one?
Working in shifts now, the two women traded sailing duties on deck to ensure they'd both get some sleep. But at one point, after novice sailor Fuyaba took the helm, they realized they had sailed all night in the wrong direction due to a miscalculation about the strength of the wind. Now,
I'm trying to keep from laughing at this. I don't think I can. Why would you have someone who's never sailed and steered a craft
in a windstorm, in a heavy storm?
And notice that she stated she was on. They were on the Today Show. Now, did you see that interview on the Today Show?
I saw a bit of it, and I got seasick.
I have never. I've seen people who are rescued at sea, and I've seen people who are rescued in other, you know, hiking and whatever. I've never seen people act like this.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like they were on the Home Shopping Network and not the Today Show. They were hawking, I guess, the U.S. Navy, Garmin, their water purifier. I'm like, wait a minute. You were stranded at sea for 5 months, and you go on the Today Show, and all you can do is do product placement promotion?
Yeah.
What's wrong with these people?
Nothing wrong. They were going to make some money.
See, that's the speculation. The speculation is that this was done.
No, I mean after the fact. I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
When all the cameras around, you rise to the occasion, right?
Right.
And this not speaking to whether they were lying or, I mean, if, you know, look.
Oh, they're lying.
You're hoping that Garmin was going to call you up and say, hey,
right.
thanks for.
Hey, nice we're doing the plug on the Today Show. We didn't ask for it, but thanks. Hey, how about being a product spokesman for us? There's so many things to this story, but I was talking about Fuyaba. You're getting, that's why I mentioned that you have someone who's never sailed before. They knew each other a week, and you're going to have them on this boat. Now, here's an interesting detail. There are many interesting details, but here's an interesting detail. Now, Apple had noted that they had gotten at some point into a 10-knot current, I guess on the open sea, on a 10-knot current with the ability to steer, a 10-knot current going west, and with the ability to steer 4 knots east. So basically you're going backwards?
Yeah.
I mean, how can you go 10 knots west and then 4 knots east?
Well, here's what...
I'm not a sailor and I'm not an expert on...
Here's what was saying, and they responded to some similar question to that in the CNN article. It wasn't until Jennifer Schiff, which was during the day, she was like, we've been pointing east this entire day, going west, Fuyaba said in an interview with the U.S. Navy after their rescue. Honestly, I started this trip without knowing anything about sailing, Fuyaba told CNN. I didn't even know what a jib was.
So you're going to have somebody who admittedly did not know what a jib was and knew nothing about sailing actually steer a 50-foot yacht, a boat?
This was orchestrated, I think they should have practiced on after the rescue, because that's when the telltale signs present themselves, you know.
They didn't do the prep work for the media presentation. In fact, Apple said that the Navy called the media. It's like, we weren't interested. The Navy called the media.
But I guess shows that you should do some thinking. Think about all aspects of if you're going to go to sea with no experience or expertise and then get lost for 5 months and be on TV, you should at least consult a public relations person or something.
Well,
we got to take a break here in a minute. This is the Carol Cox Show. We'll be back shortly. My guest is Albert Lanier, and we're talking about the sea nymphs. And you're welcome to call in when we get back, 888-5204, 888-5204. We'll be right back Aloha.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108. It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Hey, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. My guest here is Mr. Albert Lanier, and we were just talking about the sea nymph and some oceanic activities around here that took place, and the sea nymph is actually a vessel that was lost at sea, I would say, for about 5 months, and a local couple, I guess would say one was the owner and one was the guest aboard, and they were adrift for 5 months.
They claim 5 months, yes.
Right. And we never know. That's why I was thinking of the trip plan, because you obviously are going to Tahiti. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's somebody there that's expecting you, and after 19 days you would get a little nervous. After
right.
a month you would think, wait, now
right.
let me call some authorities.
Right.
See, so I was thinking, well, gee, is there any evidence to that? But I think that the story was so riddled with suspicion or mm-hmm. suspect behavior or explanations that the authorities just decided we will come out looking very bad if we try to prosecute these people for being this uninformed. I won't call them ignorant or anything.
Well, you would think that they would want to look into this case because of the glaring amount of errors and the glaring amount of discrepancies and outright misstatements made by Jennifer Apple specifically. You would
yeah.
think they would want to have an investigation. My understanding, at least at this time, is the Coast Guard has decided not to investigate, at least no criminal investigation.
Well, I heard they say that ignorance is not an excuse for breaking the law, but then I guess, you know, the military has a heart, and I mean, to prosecute them would be
right.
You would be inhumane, because I don't think just the basic thought of getting on a boat.
Right.
And look at the hull condition. Now, I might be wrong. Plant material and marine material grow fast,
mm-hmm.
but if you're going to go to Tahiti and a long route, a long trip,
mm-hmm.
you would think you'd make sure your anti-fouling paints were really good and attached on, and you know, and you don't want any growth and you don't want any barnacles. You
right.
want a smooth sailing, right?
Right.
So the preparation, but looking at that boat, it doesn't look as though.
Well,
it was,
I looked at the side, looking
yeah.
at the hull in the side, and it had a kind of, I don't want to say rusted look, but it was like a dark color.
Yeah, well,
when I saw what I saw on the video, it was like a dark color.
What the hull paint, the boot stripe, the stripes, and all that, and you know, you got to get it so it looked as though the maintenance on the boat in itself. But then 5 months at sea
mm-hmm.
in a tropical setting, you know,
right.
well, who knows? And it's just rocking and rolling. But
right.
but it sounds like I couldn't put my brain around it, because first of all, it doesn't suggest that they were.
What couldn't you put your brain around?
Well, the girl, Fuyawa, steering the boat, so that suggests they were on the power, on the mechanical power motor, right?
Right.
So,
well, I think this was before the squall, apparently.
Yeah, but I mean, so if there, she wasn't, or maybe she was sailing, maybe the mast was up. See, it was all of that kind of questions. It's not,
mm-hmm.
not the answers are not presenting themselves.
Right.
So it was like there's something really
right.
iffy about this situation.
It's like a mathematical proof that is wrong.
Yeah,
everything is wrong, and nothing comes out.
Yeah,
X equals Y.
Yeah, but just for the sake of, you know,
I mean. The reality is that this is, I just came out in my story and I said, first of all, I said they were lying. Secondly, I said they're covering something up. Mm-hmm. Something was going on here. Mm-hmm. There's a reason for them to be out at sea. There's a reason for them to have been, quote-unquote, stranded for 5 months. There's a reason for them to... And there was a reason for Apple to give the kind of story that she did. Now, again, if you look at everything that this woman has stated, it's unnecessarily specific. Mm-hmm. Now, where would you hear something that was unnecessarily specific?
Right.
An alibi. Mm-hmm. So why would there be a need to construct an alibi?
Caller, thank you for calling. Go ahead with your comment. You got your
I just want to also mention the picture of the boat. It appeared that the mast and the boom were okay. The sail, the mainsail was there. It could have been hoisted, or they could have sailed using the jib and you know, sailed with the jib only. But it seems like the mainsail was okay. All they had to do was raise it. It didn't indicate that once story said that the mast, they were dismasted, but it wasn't.
So,
picture shows main mast and then the sail were okay. They could have raised it.
Would you be allowing a novice or an inexperienced person to at the helm to travel to with a jib or a mast going up? Would you normally do that?
I'm an experienced sailor. You can sail with the jib only.
No, but I mean with a novice or someone that's never, would you allow that?
Well, she's the experienced sailor.
No, the partner that was aboard was also given the helm and left at the helm while sailing.
No one can sail a boat. No one can sail a boat unless they have experience in sailing.
Right.
It's tricky to sail a boat because there's three points of sailing.
Right. Tacking and
going windward, going leeward, and going windward.
Right.
And unless you know these three basic points of sailing, you cannot make the sailboat go where you want it to go.
Thank you. That was
what
I was trying.
Experiences. You just don't turn the wheel and the boat will turn
right.
with the sail up.
Thank you.
You have to take in consideration of the direction of the wind. So you must be experienced.
Right.
To sail a boat. It's not about a boat where you turn up and drive it like a car.
Like a car, you don't.
Right.
So I was hoping you would describe that because that's where I'm coming from. You would never put anybody there because
right.
they wouldn't even know what to do.
Right. I agree. I also was curious about your view about the communications on board a boat. Is it possible for all forms of communication, including a satellite radio, VHF antenna, radio itself, other forms, to completely not work, to completely go out, absolutely no communication? Is that feasible to you?
Electronics can go out, you know, and fail.
Right.
But with an EPIRB, it's generally no failure.
Right. My understanding is that they're fairly well crafted. The EPIRBs are fairly well made. They'll work above the waterline, obviously, and below the waterline. Even if it falls into the water, if it's activated, the signal will go out. That's my understanding.
No. You can activate the EPIRB manually or by immersion in salt water.
If it gets in salt water.
In addition to the other radios, the radios that you're supposed to have aboard the boat, mm-hmm. the batteries could run out if they don't have any solar system to recharge the batteries. So mm-hmm. they would lose the ability to communicate with their onboard two-way radios.
Yeah, they said all the forms of communication, including their satellite radio, had gone out. In fact, they were making VHF calls. They were making calls. Here's one of the details that I find odd, well, among other things, was they supposedly had made calls every day for 98 days. And the radius...
That was I once had a source to replenish the batteries overusing the radio would run the batteries out.
Eventually. Well, that's one of the things I was thinking about. But what I found odd was the fact that they supposedly made these calls with the VHF, using VHF antenna. They made these calls at least 98 days or at least every day. And supposedly the radius of this were about 1 to 2 nautical miles. That's what Apple said. They actually had a 1 to 2 mile nautical radius for these calls as opposed to 200 nautical miles, which is what they thought they had.
Another important point is a Cal 50 has a generator. So you got a generator to provide electricity unless you ran out of fuel and you can't run the generator anymore.
Well, they said that
takes care of the radio problem.
Right. Well, they said that the white squall that they ran into had knocked out their engines, and I assumed the communications. So I assumed that they said there was the squall or the storm that they came across, that they claimed they came across, that probably, if they had a generator on board, it probably was damaged, according to them, by this white squall.
What was damaged?
If they had a generator, as what he's talking about, if they had a generator, it was probably ostensibly damaged.
How
by
so? But it's contained internally.
Well, they said their communications were knocked out. Their engine was knocked out.
Well,
that's what they're. I'm just going by their claims.
Now, one of the things that grabbed me, my attention, was that first of all, they said their antenna was broken.
Yeah, they had problems with the VHF.
But then they've been talking and reaching out to people. You know, it's
they
like
they made calls every day.
Make your decision, and is it, was the antenna broken, or did you make calls every day?
That's another thing that made no sense. If there was a problem with the antenna, why would you use it to make calls for rescues? Another aspect was the fact that they, again, didn't use the EPIRB. They shot flares and waved, I guess, white, not flag, but white material or whatever it was at passing ships for, I don't know, was it? I don't know if it's 98 days, but at least 50 days or something like that. They used flares, and they waved at ships, but they wouldn't use the one thing that would send a signal to any passing ship or other kind of facility that would be in reach of that.
Or a vessel.
Right.
Not a facility. They're in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
In the ocean. So.
Whatever vessel, whatever ship, it would reach. They didn't want to use that, but they're going to go to the trouble of shooting off flares and waving at other ships, which ostensibly didn't respond or react. That doesn't make any sense.
Here are a couple of things that I question. One. That boat is gone now, right? And
it's still out in the sea.
Well, they don't have it, and we don't have the evidence because we could find several things. Mm-hmm. We could check the antenna,
correct?
We could check the boom in the jib,
correct?
We could check the generator,
right?
We could check all of those things that were supposedly broken. But when you abandon the ship and then now it becomes a navigational problem or hazard, that's probably what it is. It's not only is it an insult to most of us, but now it serves as a hunk of lead keel and others, you know, just hanging out there in the ocean. But the problem is there's just too many things, as you said, that were broken.
Mm-hmm.
How rare is that? That everything that can be broken breaks.
Right. I guess that's the odd part, that all their communication was supposedly rendered invalid, and yet they were still making distress calls using an antenna that they said they had some problems with.
Yeah, it's like telling them, okay, hey, use your antenna. Call in, call them. Oh, that's broken. Well, turn your jib and sail in that direction. Oh, that's broken too.
Right.
Well, turn on your generator and recharge your batteries. Oh, that's broken. It's as if, you know, we had a comedy of errors.
Right.
It becomes comical because you can't have that many things. And by the way, when did you discover that they were broken?
Right.
Did you leave, depart with them broken?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's a good question. It's irrational and illogical.
Caller, go ahead.
Yeah, one more comment. When the Navy rescued these ladies, if the boat was that heavily damaged, they should have sunk it rather than let it drift as being a hazard on the waters, a floating hazard. You know, a fishing boat could run into it at night, or it should have been sunk.
What about their insurance? Here's the big question. So, Mr. Captain, do you believe that they'll benefit from this because they had to abandon it because of the emergency? Would they be compensated if she had adequate insurance, or that would?
That's questionable, and I'm not sure if they had insurance, liability insurance. But normally, you have to have liability insurance if you dock your boat in a state harbor or any harbor.
Right. The Department of Boating and Recreation, DOBAR, would have required them to have an insurance of a certain amount of money.
Yeah, to rent a slip, you have to have liability insurance. But as far as insurance to the boat, that's optional.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
So everything seemed to be so convenient.
Right. And not only that, when you look at the boat, they left the boat. Mm-hmm. Supposedly, I guess someone from the Navy went on the boat, or part of the crew went on the boat, and they rendered it unseaworthy. That mm-hmm. was part of what was communicated to the media and
right.
as part of the story. It was rendered unseaworthy. So the question is, what about the boat was unseaworthy?
Right.
That's another aspect.
Did it leave the slip, its mooring mm-hmm. in the harbor here, unfit?
That's a good question.
And that's why I asked the question about the insurance. What mm-hmm. was the condition?
Right.
And so if I was the insurance, if I cared to look further into this, I'd go down, and because each boat that's at the harbor now in state waters, mm-hmm. state harbor, has to demonstrate annually or a certain period of time, depending on the vessel, you have to be able to show that it's workable, functional, mm-hmm. and you have to take it out to a certain distance and return. That's the condition of having a mooring now in the state harbors.
Right.
So did they? Were there ever any times that they didn't make that? And who did, in fact, do that? And maybe one of them will be, you know, you have to. But they don't require an full inspection. But if you've got mm-hmm. insurance,
right.
there should have been something.
Right.
Maybe, you know, go down and pull up the records.
Right.
And
well, we know that she was involved in one boating accident that pretty much wiped out her boat, her previous vessel. So that by itself would raise suspicion about her, maybe if not seafaring ability, then her relationship with craft. You know, you got into this kind of accident. Now you've got another boat. And I would also kind of be interested in, like I said, when I wrote this story, the conclusions that I came to were, as I mentioned, that they were lying, but they were also covering something up. Based on what I've seen and the details offered and the, you know, responses and everything else, the conclusion that I draw from this is that this trip was planned. Use the term trip plan. This trip was planned deliberately. They went out, or at least Apple went out deliberately. She was out there for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't want to dock anywhere. And to our knowledge thus far, they didn't dock anywhere. Now, I don't know whether they were on the boat for 5 months and were truly stranded. Now, I don't know. I can't say that definitively. And I don't know if anyone else can at this point. But they decided to go on this trip to Tahiti and South Pacific. Mm-hmm. They ended up in 900 miles southeast of Japan. They had a Taiwanese fishing vessel sight them. Her details about that vessel are vague at best. She now says that the vessel was looking to kill them. people on the vessel or the vessel's crew or what have you were looking to kill them. Mm-hmm. And they were terrified for their life. Thus, the 24 hours or we would have been dead. Why? Why do you feel that way? I think she's also admitted, at least from what I've read, that she was not lost and that she knew where she was at all times.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you...
Which is what I had stated in my piece.
If you're telling the world that you're going to head to Kiribati, then you know where you... To go somewhere, you know where you are.
Right.
You know, so the thing is that 5 months at sea, mm-hmm. who knows? I don't believe that the state or the federal government should accept any of their explanation.
Neither do I. That's why in my story I stated the Coast Guard and other authorities should intensively invest. Well, I didn't use the term intensively, but they should intensively investigate this case.
And the reason is because she's likely to come back without having the aptitude to navigate and captain and skip her boat and care for her, and then obtain another boat and expose other people to unsafe conditions.
Well, here's what you got to keep in mind about Apple. And I hate to bring this up, but this was brought out by the Daily Mail. Her boat crashed 2012. She was supposedly homeless for a while, living in a tent somewhere.
I don't care. That wouldn't have anything to do with her having a boat that doesn't function.
Right, but here's the point that I'm making. She's gone through some financial... I guess she's had issues.
But so you ask any captain with on a boat, he's had the financial issues.
Right. But it's not so much about her seafaring ability, but you're looking into her as a person.
Yeah, but that has nothing to... Trust me, that someone didn't pay their bill for 3 months wouldn't have any influence on their aptitude for and their
Their aptitude and knowledge is different.
Yeah,
what I'm talking about is to motivation for the trip. And I believe she had a motivation for the trip, and part of that motivation probably was derived from her own status. She had businesses that failed.
Okay.
She had financial issues, supposedly. And I believe that this trip was done deliberately, and it had some kind of financial aspect to it.
And you think that she thought that she would be successful at it because clearly...
Yeah.
But
whatever reason she was out there for, she was looking to make money.
Now, if I was Fui Ava just for 5 minutes, I'd be terrified now because if my friend subjected me... And I don't think they even knew one another. I read some of the accounts...
What I've read is that my understanding is they knew each other for a week.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a security guard or something like that. And I guess they had met and I guess decided to go on this voyage. That's also very suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
Because it sounds like, and I don't like to speculate, but it sounds like she was there also for a reason. Because why would you bring someone who has no knowledge of the sea, as you mentioned, was allowed to steer the boat, never had steered a boat, knew nothing about sailing. Why was she there? She was there for a specific reason. And my guess would be that it was part of this financial incentive as part of the trip.
So you're suggesting that through your suspicion and that they were orchestrated this together.
Precisely. She was part of the plan.
Now, I thought it was something as basic as what my elder used to tell me.
Mm-hmm.
Misery loves company. You know, so I don't know. I'm not saying the lady was miserable, but again, what does that say about a person?
She doesn't seem miserable to me.
To bring a person on and subject them to not your ineptness, but here, hand them the wheel. The helm of a 50-foot sailboat in the middle of the deep blue sea. And I'm sorry, that should be cause to prohibit her from ever owning a ship. But then, again, you can go and buy it in someone else's name.
See, here's the thing. It's easy to look at these two, and this is part of what I believe they were trying to do anyway. It's easy to look at these two and say they're incompetent, they're foolish, they're complete numbskulls. It's easy. That is partly what Apple wants you to think, that they're inexperienced. And she's clearly not extremely experienced, but she's experienced enough.
Yeah.
she put this together, and there was a reason for this trip? They had some kind of payoff or some kind of activity that
they
were involved
with. Well, you don't
know
that to be factual. I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
Let's make
sure. That's why I'm not going into specifics.
Yeah, well, even if you went into specifics, but you would have to have some kind of grounds to make those allegations. But you're just speculating.
Right.
Which is.
I'm saying
that. But we don't want to leave people with the impression that we know this to be fact.
No. That's why I'm saying it's my belief.
But
based on the details.
Again, with so many things that conveniently don't work, this don't work, that
right.
don't work, and we could go to Kiribati, but we were lost. And we
right.
if you were,
none of it adds up.
Caller, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
I have to interject one more question. What were her qualifications in navigation? Did she have a satellite navigation equipment, which requires, power? Or can she navigate by sextant? Or she can navigate like Nainoa Thompson
by the stars.
The stars. Mm-hmm. So that's another question too. What was her experience in navigation? Thank you, and I'll listen to your answer.
Alrighty.
Well, they were found. They were going on a trip to Tahiti, South Pacific. They're found 900 miles southeast of Japan. I'm not a navigational expert, but I can tell you that 900 miles southeast of Japan is not anywhere near Tahiti.
Mm-hmm.
And in that part of the South.
Well, I mean, first of all, we don't know what electronics he had for navigation, right? I mean, in the old days, I've actually navigated. There was Loran, and then you had just a compass that you stayed on.
Well, they had GPS.
Well, I'm saying, so
right.
all of that. So it brings in so many questions, and if we suggest that it's orchestrated, I think we have a right to say, well, this is rather abnormal,
right.
unusual. But not to say that it can't happen,
mm-hmm.
That all these things broke at the same time.
Well, here's what she stated when she was on the Today Show. What Matt Lauer noted was that in June, the Coast Guard had there were some relatives or so forth. People had mentioned they hadn't been in contact with some sailors out there, some boaters out there. The Coast Guard spoke to, according to Matt Lauer, a vessel called the Sea Nymph and spoke to the crew or someone with the crew, and they said that they were a day away from Tahiti. This was in June.
Mm-hmm.
Apple stated, after she did her plug of the Garmin GPS, that their GPS track would demonstrate that they were nowhere near Tahiti.
Mm-hmm.
Now, isn't that kind of an interesting detail?
Right,
state that. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Why was she so confident?
It gave cause to ask questions, and
none of what she has said is logical or makes sense.
Yeah. But anyway, there's so much. Maybe we should inquire just for the sake of bringing some understanding and clarity to this, but
mm-hmm.
I would say that there's been so many occasions that locally here, mm-hmm. people's lives have been saved because they use a trip plan,
mm-hmm.
they make sure their boat is seaworthy,
mm-hmm.
they make sure their communications are proper, and they also notify a person, hey, look, I
right.
intend to be there on the 24th,
right.
and I want to eat some turkey, and I'm
right.
excited about this. I've waited 15 years, and then all of a sudden,
right.
nothing happened. You don't show up, and nobody gets
I haven't heard anything about whether they were expected by any party in Tahiti.
The
or
people
any
are
other
waiting
part.
For you in Tahiti. We go, where are they, man? I was
right.
excited to see them. They were going
right.
to bring me some macadamia nut with
right.
chocolate cover,
right.
something, right?
Right.
No, these are the things that led me to think, wow, this is...
Well...
If I saw her on a boat,
mm-hmm.
I would say, keep the anchor out.
Well, let me just put out these questions to the audience and whoever's listening and let them think about it and you think about it as well. You had a storm the first night that that supposedly you set out. But you decide, after 3 days and 2 nights, not to dock anywhere. not to dock anywhere in the islands here in Hawaii. You don't do that. You then proceed on. You also decide not to dock anywhere else. Mm-hmm. You don't go to Kiribati, Christmas Island. You don't. You said you're going to go to the Cook Islands. You end up not going there. You certainly don't go to Tahiti. You don't dock anywhere that we know of. Not only that, but all your communication supposedly doesn't work.
Right.
Satellite phone. The
jib don't work. The sail don't work. Your mast don't work. Your
antenna
don't
work. That's a whole other area.
Yeah.
The rigging from the mast broke off. That you've had problems with that. You had to take when you see the video of the boat, sail's been lowered.
Mm-hmm.
So you see the mast up there. That you were that you supposedly got in contact eventually with this fishing vessel that rammed you 8 times. So you had them contact you, and then the Navy comes and gets you, rescues you, sends someone on the ship and mm-hmm. says this isn't seaworthy. There are so many unanswered questions. To begin with, why was the craft rendered unseaworthy? I haven't heard thus far any reason for it other than the cockamamie reason that they said a white squall had knocked out their engines and they could be...
Here's what also caught my attention, and I would have asked this if I had a chance to interview her.
Mm-hmm.
You're suggesting to me, Miss Apple, Miss mm-hmm. Fuyawa, that this Taiwanese vessel rammed you 8 times.
Mm-hmm.
That's assault. That's attempted murder. That's mm-hmm. High crimes on the seas. And you should have filed a formal complaint and
right.
Insisted
right.
that this met, but it didn't rise to that, you see. So I thought, well, gee whiz, if you're going to tell us about it, and then with all the hell you've been through, bring closure to this, and this is one of those things where, but instead, I don't know if they file a formal complaint, and I don't know if that's true. The why would the Coast Guard and the Navy not pursue this?
Right.
Because this is an American vessel, American
right.
citizen, and so when getting that has little to do with her control, but it says that maybe this is why they decided not to pursue this, because it just didn't hold water.
Well. Like I mentioned before, the Taiwanese fishing vessel to me is one of the keys to this entire case because it's a detail that isn't talked about.
Mm-hmm.
She's recently come out and said that the Taiwanese fishing vessel or people on board supposedly were wanted to kill them, which explains or I guess serves as a convenient pretext to her point that within 24 hours they're going to be dead. What's odd... I mean, there are many odd things to this story, but what's odd is the fact that the questions that remain, I guess, is who are the people on this vessel? Why were you afraid of them? What caused you to be afraid of them? Also, why was the craft rendered unseaworthy? What made the Navy or the officials that looked at it decide we're not going to tug this back? Because... And the interesting thing about the Taiwanese sea vessel is this. Initially, they said they were treated kindly by the crew.
Mm-hmm. By the crew of?
Of the Taiwanese
right.
sea fishing vessel.
Right.
Later on, they then changed their story to say that they feared being on the vessel.
Right.
And now they're saying that the vessel, the crew of the vessel, and the vessel wanted to kill them.
So the Navy and the United States Coast Guard are implicated in neglecting their duties in that an American citizen mm-hmm. was assaulted on the high seas and they didn't pursue it. They aren't, it's not an international event.
Right.
Or not
well,
a,
it's an international
well,
story.
Well, no, forget the story part. I'm talking
right.
about their role as protecting our interests.
Right.
And not tolerating if you, an American-owned vessel,
right.
registered legally owned, is assaulted by a Taiwanese vessel,
mm-hmm.
and in turn, no incident is filed, nothing is filed.
Right.
So I was just chuckling when I first read it. Go, well, the Navy would lend itself to this kind, but then I thought maybe they saw through this thing and just figure, right, where do we pick up this loose string? It may lead to something, but not our problem. Coast Guard, there should be an international investigation.
Right.
Someone.
Here's what you have to understand about the Ashland. They were tasked by the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard fed them the
right.
coordinates.
That's what,
and they were tasked, because they were in the general area, to pick them up.
Well, that's that network that that happens if they agree,
right.
vessels agree,
right.
national, international, that, hey, if you see a distressed vessel or you come to its aid and you stand by or you aid as best you can, mm-hmm. to, you know, you don't, because one day their boat may sink.
Right.
Caller, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's me again.
Okay.
In regards to the Taiwanese fishing vessel, I understand it was the captain of the fishing vessel that alerted the Navy or other authorities that they had encountered this vessel in distress and that they did not want to be picked up.
Okay.
Well, that's essentially what I heard at the very beginning, that the vessel had contacted the authorities, the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard gave the coordinates to the Navy. What Apple said is that she went over, swam over, or went over to that boat, the Taiwanese vessel, to make a SAT call, because they wanted to make a SAT call. So either it makes sense that the Taiwanese vessel alerted the U.S. Coast Guard. I think that's probably what happened. But the question, again, that's why I think that vessel is very important. The question, however, is this. Why is it that Apple feels or stated that that vessel wanted to kill them? That's what she stated. That's what I saw reported, that they were afraid that the crew, that that vessel was going to kill them.
Well,
why did she feel that way?
Well, no, why did she state that?
Well,
we don't know if she felt that anyway.
Well, she stated that she felt they were going to kill them. Well, she stated that they were going to kill them.
This is what she represents. She, right. At that time, she was making phone calls. She
right.
didn't say that. I mean, if they were going to try to kill her, you would think she'd be busy trying to make a phone call? She would have had a story to go, I was struggling with for my life to get out of there, and I dove over the side of this vessel to get the hell out
of
that vessel.
Well, when it comes to that vessel, it's inconsistent. They said it first, and
just saying
them kindly. And then
inconsistent
saying,
with what she's saying. I'm not
right.
going back. So just offering a little more suspect commentary.
She's, again, what I noted in my piece is that for whatever reason, not just that they were lying, but they're covering up whatever right. happened out there. And this is part of the cover-up.
Yeah, you got, when you find out what they were covering up, come back and talk to us about it. Because I don't, these layers of things that fell into place, I don't think you could build a perfect story if as a seaman.
Mm-hmm.
As everything broken, and when
right.
you say, well, why didn't you pull into this? Well, there was right. no dock to fit us, and... Well, you don't need to. You could pull in the shallows and drop an anchor. They may
right.
allow you an anchor, a tender. You know, I mean...
That's the strange part about... That's one of the strangest parts about this
when
story.
When someone offers you a solution, when you're stuck in the mud and
right.
you're saying, no, that won't work and that won't work, you can draw the conclusion, go away saying, well, you want to be stuck in the mud.
Precisely.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
precisely
I
what
understand.
I'm saying.
Yeah, no,
that's
understand.
What I'm saying.
They
went out there deliberately.
Yeah.
They deliberately didn't want to dock after a supposed storm. They deliberately didn't want
yeah.
anyone to really know where they were.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until the Navy rescued them.
See, that's the thing about writers. They wanted to write the story out, and the people that are on radio already figured out and just spit it out and be done. That's what we're talking to say to you. This whole thing, it's like, wow. There's so many things that say, red light.
Yeah.
Red light.
That's why
red
I wrote
flag.
About it.
Red flag,
yeah.
You know, it's like, and then you mean tell me we didn't, the Coast Guard didn't say, and we have filed a formal through the Secretary of State, we have contacted the country of and filed a complaint, either under the Pelley Amendment or something, you know, because this, we will not tolerate this assault on American citizens. What, you know, what next?
Mm.
We don't have any of that, right?
Right.
So, anyway. We talked a bit about the sea nymphs, but if you come up with something else, I'd be interested in coming back, and I'll see what I can go look around and see
this,
what's...
Yeah.
But, you know, fortunately, she laid it out there. I mean, not thinking that the world is so small now when it comes to communications and exchange of information, and she may find herself still yet in hot water.
My suspicion is this, that this is a deliberate lie, and that even her crazy, illogical, and irrational stories are all deliberate.
Yeah.
Because there's not enough here. Yeah, I mean, I've had people on my threads. I think one or two of them said that they thought she was crazy.
Mm-hmm. What is your thread, right quick?
My story's on Civil Beat. It's called The Strange Case of the CNIMH.
We're not claiming she's crazy.
That's what some people have said.
Let's make sure.
So I just mentioned that some people state that.
Yeah.
My belief is that she's not, that this is all very deliberate, mm-hmm. that she deliberately told illogical, irrational stories that wouldn't add up to cover up whatever else was out there.
Well, let's hope that we can find something to offer some greater insight to the facts and the truth. But I'd be interested in, because there's a, you know, and I remember the vessel running aground off near Magic Island. I remember the keel being stuck there. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, as I said, I have pictures of the keel that was left in the rocks there that I complained about them state and make them clean it up. But anyway, so much for that. You know, while I got you here, we were talking about the long line vessel, the Pacific Paradise.
Okay.
And we know the story. It run aground and all. And speaking of the Coast Guard, October 12th, basically, this is a news release of the United States Coast Guard. Responders continue to work to remove fuel. Vessel grounded off Honolulu. That's one. The next one, on the 13th, response to grounded vessel of Honolulu continues. Let's see here. Update. Responders continue efforts to remove vessel grounded off Honolulu. Salvage efforts continue for grounded fishing vessel off Kaimana Beach. And then we get another one here. U.S. November 9th, U.S. Coast responders continue wreck removal efforts for Pacific Paradise. Responders install underwater mooring near Pacific Paradise. This is on November 11th. November 8th, Coast Guard partners continue to work to salvage Pacific Paradise. And this is just a 79-foot long-line vessel. Mm-hmm. What happens if we use a gas barge or a tanker, or car hauler or carrier, one of Pasha or one of the bigger tankers? What happens? Just for a 79-foot vessel, I think that this is a disgusting event in the way that they have handled this. The removal of it. I flew my drone over it to document, because I had heard that there were fuel leaking from the vessel. Fuel now. Mm-hmm. Well, I captured that around the 1st of November. And by the way, for many of you listening out there, that these pictures that I took actually have been used internationally now to bring attention to this plight or to this situation here. And, I mean, France, New York Times, Seattle Times, Washington Post, you name the papers. And you can see these pictures at carolcox.com if you want to, or Facebook, Carol Cox. But the pictures that I took with my drone showed that this material was flowing freely from the vessel. And the Coast Guard's explanation was, well, it's just a sheen, and it's not a problem that's being washed off the deck. That was in November 1st now. A sheen being washed off the deck. When the pictures that I have got globs and globs of oil and materials flowing. And now they're saying, and they said that it was just off the deck because everything else had been cleaned up. When in reality, It hadn't been cleaned up, and now they're making this effort. So I think that taxpayers should be screaming about this whole treatment. And go ahead.
It's really strange because I guess we're going from one strange thing to another. But what I found really kind of odd was the fact that this thing was just leaking out fuel and leaking out oil. And other than, I think, taking fuel or oil off the ship,
yeah,
no, they weren't doing anything to stop the leak.
Yeah,
they're just allowing this, you know, all these fluids to run into the sea. I mean, you're talking about off of, I was going to say downtown, right, you know, you're talking about X amount of miles off of the shore. And mm-hmm. and this boat is just there, just keeling, you know, slowly going under, and this stuff is just flowing out, all this oil and all this fuel
off Waikiki, one of the major parts components of our economy,
right? Tourism.
And I interviewed a couple of people, mm-hmm. and they were leaving the water that were surfing and all. And they, why are you leaving? Oh well, I just swallowed some diesel, and this is while and I got it all over my skin. It's in my hair. I'm burning. It's and yet the Coast Guard is saying it's just a sheen.
So you actually met people, I guess, in Waikiki?
No. I was there at Kaimana Beach interviewing people for my
Waikiki
show,
yeah.
and actually obtained statements from them. And you could see the oil, you know, beating up on them. And they left. One gentleman I interviewed, I asked him, can you tell me anything about this vessel or what's your opinion? And he goes, I used to work on that vessel as a former NOAA Fisheries Observer, that's Pacific boat there. And he said, I was out surfing, and I just got, I could taste it and got it in my mouth, and I got to go home.
Wow.
And yet, now that was week and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the Coast Guard, and I'm they're an awesome, and nothing like seeing that red bird come when you need a rescue or nothing. They do a great job. But I think that they have become too big for their britches, and they're playing this political role. And in this situation, we've heard nothing from our illustrious chairperson, Suzanne Case, of the Department of Land and Natural Resources. Not a word.
She's now, a favorite of yours, obviously.
Well, she's special to me. I mean, I don't know there of any other person that I don't give as much thought to. I mean, she consumes a lot of my time, you
right.
know. I can't help but think of her when I see a fishing vessel run aground or guys shooting people that, or, you know, officers being charged with rape and fictitiously orchestrating sea cucumber events and stories that show that, you know, all of this. She, of all people in my life, I would say she takes most of my time. And it's just not because I want it that way. It's just that everything she touches seemed to be have this stall about it. And the Coast Guard is serving. And for example, they say, oh, the state health department is doing samples, conducting samples. Wait, what do you mean samples? Sampling to see what? If the oil is in the water when you got a ship out there? You know, this is...
We got to take samples. We got to determine what this is.
This is when Big Brother becomes a problem, because Big Brother should act like Big Brother and
actually,
tell Little Brother, you know.
It sounds like they're acting like Little Brother, not Big
yeah,
Brother.
Yeah, and I say that as bad as it sounds, as negative as it sounds, I think the Coast Guard has become complicit in a great many of our failures that we see and demonstrated daily in the protection of environmental. And they, without them, we would be in the worst of a pickle. But I just think that they need to shy away from speaking on behalf or covering up, or, you know, when the public is inquiring about something. When I film pictures showing oil bubbling and globs of it floating and for a mile and a half or what have you, just say to the DLNR, it's your baby. We're going to call it what it is. Yes, it's oil. And then also, these boats have fecal matter in them, too, you know, because the people go to the bathroom. They have bathrooms on these vessels, right?
Right.
So if you had 20 people, now this is why I get really upset about people, the big brother standing in the way and said, don't worry, I take care of this. This is just a little environmental guy asking questions. When you know that a vessel came in with approximately 20 people on board, mm-hmm. and it had been at sea for several days, 14, 20, 30 days, right? Mm-hmm. Where did those people relieve themselves? Where did they defecate? You assume they defecated and used the bathroom on board. So when that vessel run aground, did you ever hear anybody speaking about the fecal coliform or the fecal matter that is contained in that ship's bathroom or hull?
I haven't heard about fecal matter.
No.
But the response to this vessel could be termed fecal matter.
Yeah, bull. But you follow that. You don't play with people's lives. And this is in the heart of our, let's face it, our economy.
Well, I guess you interviewed the people there at, what was it, Kaimana Beach?
Kaimana Beach.
I've been there before. So these people, you had people coming out of the water. They said they had, you mentioned diesel fuel?
Diesel is fuel, what they run.
Right. So they had fuel on their body, and mm-hmm. supposedly it swallowed it in the water.
Oh, yeah, ingested it.
Yeah. Not only that, you have to wonder, since you brought up fecal matter, whether there was any fecal matter flowing out from the ship.
Well,
so if that's the case, people out there could have ingested this fecal matter.
Well, you know, you still haven't heard them even speak of removal of the sewage aboard that vessel, the waste.
No, I haven't heard anything.
You understand.
And, right. And I only heard about the fuel and the oil.
Yeah. So you see that and you would think we'd be more aggressive. And then I've mentioned early on there were thousands of fishing hooks, the large fishing hooks, mm-hmm. aboard. Well, when the fire occurred, now what happened to the fishing hooks? Are they still in the water? Did they get introduced? Or were they didn't extract them to take them off the vessel? So the Coast Guard is absolutely, I don't know why they feel that they have to go and hold the hand of DLNR or just act as regulators, as advisors, but don't be complicating matters for covering up for them or shielding for them. I think that's what's annoying about this situation.
Right.
They don't have to be. They are the regulators.
Well, and I'm curious about, you had interviewed some people there at Kaimana Beach. I was just wondering, I wonder if there are any people who have any views about this, any callers who have any views.
Well, they better call in the last second. Hold on. Caller real quick. Got a minute.
Yeah, the fishing boat probably has a holding tank for sewage for use when they're in port, but when they're out at sea, they probably dump the sewage in the ocean. The same way with sailboats. They do have sewage holding tanks when they're in port.
Right.
And they dump it in the ocean, but when they're in port, they can have it picked up by a sewage
when they're out at sea,
collector at the harbor.
But when they're out at sea, what are you suggesting they do? What are they doing?
It goes into the ocean just like the ocean liners.
Okay, so they just pull the flush and then it flushes out.
They use a switch valve.
Okay, and then so they would that be called, considered charming the fish?
Well, most large vessels
are baiting the fish. I'm talking about the fishing boat when they flush the toilets.
A fishing boat, they probably just have standard sewage holding tanks,
yeah,
which they use when they're in port.
Right, so that vessel has a holding tank on it, and it's out there in
the
water.
Yeah, so there's probably sewage in there, like you say.
Yeah, and probably
there
leaking
was no
out.
Mention that they're taking the sewage out. Right.
So anyway, I just think that this stack of, news releases by the Coast Guard. I've asked the Coast Guard respectfully, stand up sometimes, and I know that's about sister agency, and you don't want to be bad-mouthing other agencies.
If the sewage holding tank gets damaged, you'll have sewage all over Waikiki Beach.
Yep. All right, well, thank you, caller. We're down to our last seconds. Albert, thank you for calling, coming in.
Oh, thank you. Haven't been here for a while, but it was certainly a fascinating reason to come in. The sea nymph is got to be the most interesting sea story, certainly sea rescue and story that I've come across in years. I never say this about, like, stuff that I covered years ago, articles and issues and so forth. But, I mean, if there's anything that begs to be written as a book, this does.
Okay,
I mean,
well,
is a book.
Well, thank you, Albert. This is the Carol Cox Show. Thanks for joining. We'll see you next week. Take care.
Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.